Welcome back to Game Time. I'm your coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths. And as always, we're having a conversation with an impactful leader. I am so excited to welcome David Postolsky to the show today. So David is an IP and patent expert, attorney, international, I should have said. He is a partner in Gerhardt Law Firm. And folks, I love David. Before I turn it over to you, David, I'm going to tell folks how I know you. So folks, I decided that I was going to try to do some trademarking things as a part of my business. And I, for some reason, was like, I can just do this myself. I can figure it out. I figured out hard things before. Folks, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't know all the ins and outs of the nuances. And I ended up getting referred by Jeff Campo, awesome lawyer, fantastic human, to David for some help and guidance. And David, we had one conversation, and within 10 minutes of our conversation, I was like, this guy's amazing, and I must have him on my show. So all that said, I did abandon said trademarking effort, folks. If you want to know the spoiler alert, but the gem of the experience was what I learned, and the gem of the experience was meeting you and having you here today. So thank you so much. I'm going to stop talking. Welcome.
I appreciate that. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for tuning in and listening. Thank you, Shauna. Yeah, I'm excited to kind of get into some of those topics about intellectual property. It's always a hot topic for people, but yes, I agree. There's a lot of people that think they can do it on their own, and I think some can for sure.
Yeah.
But it is a process, and there's a lot of intricacies, and of course, you should, you know, probably use an attorney. You know.
Yes, that is the thing, and so David, to set the foundation for folks, the reason why I was so compelled to have you on is the way you operate. I think what you said, there's probably more, so please chime in. But you said that you don't ever charge people for an initial consulting conversation. And I think you said it, if anybody does, like, they're a bad business person.
Agreed, for sure. No, I know. I said it a little bit differently. What I normally say is, I don't charge for education and empowerment. That's like a huge thing. I do not believe that you should be charging for education and empowerment unless you're paying for tuition in school or something like that. And even then, I have some issues with that as well. But from my perspective, a consultation should be free. Everybody needs to know exactly what they are getting themselves into. And that shouldn't cost money up front. That's how I operate. I started my career at really large law firms where we charge you for breathing. And so, you know, now that I'm a partner at a small firm and kind of devoted my life to entrepreneurs, this is the way that I choose to do it. And this is the way I think how I can show love to other entrepreneurs. Like, no entrepreneur wants to like pay a retainer for money to sit in a bank somewhere where they can using that money to help their cash flow in their business. So it's just sitting at my lawyer's office for what, till when, to do what with. And so, yeah, I am not a typical lawyer, and our firm is not a typical law firm. And yes, consultations are free. No retainers. We don't charge by the hour. And everything is fixed and flat. Like, that's everybody, and that takes away so much stress from the, you know, lawyer client relationship. Can't tell you how many people come to me with like this PTSD, whether they, you know, whether it's like their parents' lawyer screwed them or some lawyer that they knew in business. Everybody comes to the table with these preconceived notions about lawyers. So I'm looking to bust that all up.
Yeah.
I'm looking to bust those myths, you know? Yeah.
I know, but that's how I felt when I talked to you, because the other element that really stood out was that you actually want to educate your clients or your prospective clients. And that was the thing you were trying to say to me, or you said to me several times. And I did walk away from it more informed. But it was interesting because I was afraid to talk to a lawyer because, again, you'll charge me for breathing.
Yes.
But also I felt afraid to not do it because I thought that I should do this trademarking initiative. I really appreciate the way you approach it. To your point, I think you said like you don't charge for empowerment.
Education and
empowerment. Yeah, that's such a great, I love that. And then your element of like, you're actually committed to, you've dedicated your career now to working with entrepreneurs. And we were talking about this right before we went on. I want to thank you for doing that, first of all, in general, but also this moment in time in the world. It's such an important thing because, as we were saying, in times of turmoil that we have across the world these days, that's actually when you see, and you said you've done some research, I'd love for you to share that, but you actually see more entrepreneurialism, more innovation. A lot of people do it without the protection. So again, thank you for operating the way you do.
Yeah, thank you for that. It's good to be recognized. I want to tell you a funny story, actually. It just came to my head.
Yeah.
I was in Japan with my husband about in June of last year. And we went to a Michelin star restaurant. I mean, good food needs to be paid for. And so, of course, we went to a Michelin star restaurant. And the waiter came over. And he had very broken English. And he says to us, there's only like 10 tables in the restaurant. He goes, which is very common, right, for Michelin. So he says to us, oh, what do you do? You know, to me, I said, oh, I'm a patent attorney. I'm a trademark attorney. Oh, okay. And then he turned to my husband and he said, what do you do? And my husband was like, oh, I'm an educator. I'm a teacher. And he literally bowed to him. And like, I was like, oh my God. Like, it was crazy. Like, it just kind of shows you, like, the almost the cultural distinction between potential professions. I don't take that much offense to it because I'm also an educator. Like, that's a big thing. Like, I'm a professor at different universities. I teach a bunch of different courses. And so I'm also an educator, but it wasn't the first thing I said, so I didn't get a bow. But, like, yes, I think it's really important for people to be educated on the things that are out there and the things that they're getting themselves into. But yes, back to your point for a minute, I have given a presentation that I was very curious because whenever the world's like currently in the last 20 years that I've been practicing, whenever the world has gone through something and I'm talking to colleagues that are not IP attorneys, everybody's suffering through something. They're like, business is down, COVID, business is down, tsunami, business is down, like things like that. And so, I never was able to say, oh yeah, business is not down for us. And this got me very interested and like, wait a second, entrepreneurs are bred from, strife and war and famine. And like entrepreneurs are there to solve the problems of the world. And so I really wanted to understand this. And so I looked back over the last 250 years at the United States Patent Office and tracked the number of patents. Patents are all about innovation. The number of patents that have been filed at key times in the world, World War I, Depression, World War II, and innovation during those times are up. COVID, innovation was huge. I can't tell you how many entrepreneurs came out of the woodwork, how many clients came to us with like a new mask, or something like that, a mask to drink through a straw, like anything you could possibly think of. People were coming up with ideas. And so that has kind of, I guess, fueled my passion that I've had for giving back to entrepreneurs, is that entrepreneurs are the fuel that are, driving our world out of these terrible situations that we sometimes find ourselves in. And they need to get some credit for that too. So maybe they deserve a bow. Maybe the entrepreneurs deserve a bow. The teachers, for sure. Maybe not so much the lawyers, I get it from this point of view, but at least the entrepreneurs need a bow, also.
Yes, you are getting a bow. You are getting a bow. To the entrepreneurs. No, it's so interesting. And as you're saying it, you said earlier, I am not a typical lawyer. I was thinking about this morning. I was driving back from something to record with you. And I was thinking about that. That is a choice you make every single day.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
And when society and business are actually tend to, especially for a air quotes, typical lawyer, reward the things that are the other way of operating, call it.
Yeah.
It just is something that you decide to do every single day. So as silly as it sounds, why do you operate this way? What point in your career did you decide that this is the way you want to operate?
It's a really good question. It took me a long time to come to this realization. It took me about 10 years working at a large law firm, then working at a large company, to come to the realization that really who I was trying to give the love and respect back to, this is going to sound so cliche, but it's so true, was my dad. My dad was really like the first entrepreneur that I ever knew. He was not really educated. He came from Israel to America, worked his ass off, like just hustling like a true entrepreneur, and did really, really, really well for himself. And for many years, I didn't respect that. I didn't know to respect that. I was like trained to, you know, I had to go to school and I had to go to law school and I had to do this. And I had to take that path that, you know, you're socialized, and that he probably had a hand in my socialization because he wanted me to work less than what he worked, you know, type of thing. But I realized about 10 years ago that I wanted to give back to the ultimate entrepreneur that I never really was able to give back to, which was my dad, because he died, you know, I was pretty young when he died, before I even went to law school, he died. And so I realized like, wow, maybe this is where my life is headed. Is this, I was constantly in everywhere I worked, I was being, you know, butting up against entrepreneurs. I was, you know, running into entrepreneurs. I was, you know, helping entrepreneurs. And so I realized, wow, I need to really go full throttle in this. And so I decided 10 years ago that this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to be 24/7. I wanted to, you know, educate and empower. I wanted to, you know, to kind of like, you know, put out these ripples of like, you know, help and education, and I wouldn't charge for anything like that. And karmically, it all kind of comes back to you, right? I mean, it's like, it's that classic thing, give before you can get. And I sort of kind of lived my life that way because I believe that's the way that my dad lived as well. And so, so it wasn't like an aha moment, like from like, I didn't wake up from a dream one day or didn't fall in the, because I have a lot of inventors that will come to us with those stories. Like I woke up and had this great idea. I hit my head. I had this great idea. No, it was a slow 10-year process of circumstances that kind of slapped me in the face. Like, this is what's truly going to make my soul satisfied, is if I, you know, if there's something more important than the billable hour, there's the importance is helping companies grow and giving back to them so that they can then give to me, you know, type of thing. Yeah. It took a minute.
It's so nice to hear you articulate it that way. To be able to do that, it required that self-awareness.
Oh, yeah.
And you being open to it, and that there's a level of curiosity that comes with leading this way, leading by giving first, leading by tuning into, wait a minute, I'm feeling a little bit different about this right now. What's really going on? And investigating that. And, you know, there's a degree of vulnerability in that. So it's a great example, I think, to be sharing with the audience, and that this is what it takes when people are like, God, I don't know how or why someone do that. Really the how of it. How of it is really that ability to listen to yourself, notice different feelings, get curious about it. And then there's the willingness to take the action, and then the action itself. So those are all very different steps along the way.
Yeah, I totally agree. I agree with everything you just said. There is a vulnerability that you need. And I actually think I see that in most successful entrepreneurs that I know. There's like those typical archetypes of entrepreneurs. And there's the ones that, like, you know, like ugly baby syndrome. Like, my baby is not ugly, right? Like that type of thing. Like, my idea is the best and you can't tell me different. Those are not the ones that really do well. It's the ones that are vulnerable, that really kind of take in like the things that they're hearing and learning and seeing. I love those types of entrepreneurs. They're the ones, I think, are the most successful. And even if they're not the most successful, because most entrepreneurs fail, that's just the odds are against people, whatever.
Yes.
But those are the ones that then learn from that experience of failure to kind of bounce back to their next venture and do well. So.
Right, right.
Yeah, I think there's a mindset here for sure. There's some mindset that has to happen. Yes, totally. That's right. That's totally. Yes, just add a logo and then I think you'll be able to get it, you know?
Well, I love that you said that. And I, of course, jokingly, but not really jokingly, inserted that because it points back to what I was saying, that some people, when they don't know the how of how to transition to those type of things, it is where it's like, oh, a mindset. If I follow a mindset that I can see produces optimal performance in people, then I can try that. Then I can put some training wheels in motion there. But you know, I think it's important to share this message with people. Even the part you said that most entrepreneurs fail, but here's the thing, the only way that we get to the win, that we get to the success is by, to your point, like learning from every single one of those failures. And then when we're talking sports analogies and everything, that's why athletes put up so many shots or run the practices and the drills and all that stuff. They're going to miss a hell of a lot. They're also going to make it. And you learn along the way.
Yes, I agree. It's interesting. You bring up a good point. I am giving a presentation next month at Harvard to their entrepreneurial program. I sit on their board to kind of develop their entrepreneurial kind of curriculum. And so we're having a program about entrepreneurs and their mental health, which is a big thing. Like, it's very lonely to be an entrepreneur. You have to have a lot of confidence with vulnerability. Like, there's a lot of characteristics about it. And a lot of them kind of have to really overcome, you know, rejection, like some of the worst things that we don't want to face, they have to overcome. Having no money and like rejection and like, you know, it's like almost manic to some extent. Like they're like these like highs and there's huge lows. And like, how do you kind of deal with that? And so we have a panel with, I'm the only lawyer on the panel, but there are two other women on the panel. And we'll be talking to entrepreneurs in the audience, like they're students or future entrepreneurs, about these very topics that we're talking about today. Like this idea that you have to have this grit, but also be vulnerable and kind of how to navigate those types of decisions. I'm truly inspired by entrepreneurs. I really am. Every day, the journeys that I'm part of, the innovations that I see them try to bring to life, and the struggles and the successes, and wow, it definitely kind of fuels my fire for sure.
It's really true. And when you were talking about that, the mental health aspect, this came up in conversation a couple times this week with some folks. Here's the thing. When you're an entrepreneur, you have a different sense of urgency than 90% of the people that you're talking
to. Totally. Yep.
And it is, and that is with your sales, because entrepreneurs, you're always selling your idea to somebody, right?
Totally.
And there is just a complete difference. It's the opposite level of urgency. And that is hard to turn the volume down on that. It's really hard to regulate it, to your point. And it does play tricks on the mind.
Yeah. And so from my perspective, it's the least I can do to try to be 24/7 for my entrepreneurial clients, because I know that they're going to be texting me in the middle of the night. I know that they're going to want to speak on a Saturday and Sunday. And I'm okay with that. I really am. There's some lawyers that are not okay with that. Some people that are not okay with that. You know, work is my life. My life is my work, and my work is my life. I'm one of those types of people. You have to have understanding family around you to have to kind of, you know, have no boundaries. You know, if you're taking a call from, you know, Maui, or like you're taking a call like in Mykonos, like with your family and on vacation because, you know, you've committed because you don't take any breaks. You have to have a really understanding support system behind that. But that's probably what the entrepreneur is dealing with as well, right? They have a very good, solid support system that allows them to be manic at times. And so having a manic lawyer help them is probably a good thing, you know?
So I'm bowing to your husband and I'm bowing to my husband.
Totally.
For tolerating that incessant go, that drive, that sense of urgency. But it feels sometimes rare to see someone channel it as you have, again, especially in the field that you're in. So again, I just really, really appreciate it. And so I want to make sure that we pause and you can share with folks, like, what actually is it that you're doing? Who's a really good client fit for you? How should people think about what you're offering?
Good. Thank you for that. So I am what's called an intellectual property attorney. I help people protect their ideas. Their ideas could be based in science. So I have a science background. My background's in chemistry and computer science. So I can help people protect their inventions that might be based in software or chemistry or physics or bio, mechanics, electrics, geology, any sort of science you can get a patent on. And so as a registered patent attorney, I can help them protect that idea. I can also help them protect for those that are maybe not in the world of science, but like have a great product or a great service that they want to offer. They want to brand it. And so getting a trademark is the second, you know, federal form of intellectual property. And we help people protect their brands, their logos, their slogans, their color schemes, stuff like that. And then the last form of intellectual property that we help people with as an IP attorney is copyright. So patents are all about science. Trademarks are all about branding and selling something. And so, you know, protecting that source identifier as to what it is you're selling. But copyrights are the form of intellectual property that's all about the creative and artistic works. So if I am a painter, a sculptor, a choreographer, a photographer, a kind of movie maker of audiovisual works, a writer, you know, I write poetry or a book or something like that. Those creations are also worthy of a federal form of protection called copyright. And it's a really awesome area of law. I actually don't think I would be a lawyer if it wasn't for intellectual property. I tried my hands in like family law and disability law and like criminal. None of that was doing it for me. This is really kind of fun and creative as well. It's always good to, we're always at like the cutting edge of technology. We kind of see things before everybody else does because you want to protect before you publicize the thing that you're doing. So that has amazing applications. Also, there are probably millions of regular lawyers in the world. In let's just take the United States, 20, 25 million lawyers, but there's only about 200,000 patent attorneys. It's a very specific type of law. And that was really attractive to me. I kind of didn't want to be like everybody else. I wanted to kind of be in demand a little bit, if you will. It's like a special breed of lawyer that has like a science background and then goes to law school. It doesn't really happen that way. And so it's been really fun. And of course, entrepreneurs are at the core of that. Startups and entrepreneurs are at the core of, like, you know, great ideas and protection and stuff like that. And a lot of them are, you know, trying to get investment. And, you know, I'm sure some of your listeners have watched Shark Tank before. Like, people that are coming on Shark Tank, the first question they're asked is, do you have a patent? And so it's a huge kind of asset to a company to have a patent or trademark or copyright. And so it's great to kind of help people protect it. And then finally, I'll just say one more thing. It is the only way in the world, like, to have the registered form of intellectual property, the patent, trademark, or copyright. It is the only way in the world, regardless of any country that you live in, to stop someone else from doing what you're doing, from copying you, from infringing you, from taking what's yours. There's no other way. Like, if you don't have the patent, trademark, or copyright, and you come crying to me saying, I think someone stole my idea, I think someone stole my brand, if someone's infringing my product, there's nothing we can do for you. You must have the registered form of patent, trademark, or copyright. So, it's definitely a fun area of law. It has its challenges, stuff like that. But, like, In the end, it's great to kind of help creators, inventors, and authors and stuff like that.
Yeah. So when you said something about, I didn't want to be like everybody else, which actually got me onto something else that I wanted to talk about, is your authenticity shines through so wonderfully. And I think it helps. It's got to help your ability to connect with people. You're just so real and you're come across as so comfortable in your own skin. I really appreciate that. The more we can show up that way, then we set the table for someone else to be able to be themselves. And it can be a thing where people, for a variety of reasons, people can feel not that comfortable being who they truly are. Yeah. Clearly are. And I'm curious, like, were you always this way?
Yeah, well, if you ask my mother, she probably would say, well, at my bar mitzvah, I had a color scheme that I wanted at my bar mitzvah. I wanted everybody to be in black tuxes, but my tux had to be white with a red cummerbund. So I think there's always been a sense of like, I want to do it a little bit differently. Some of the best compliments that I get in today's world is even in a, you know, in a suit, tie, cufflinks, I do the whole thing. I love all that. Cufflinks, handkerchief, the whole thing. Best compliment I'll get after being dressed up like that and kind of meeting with a client is like, can't even believe you're a lawyer. Like, I just can't believe that, because the way that you just broke that down it was really understandable. And that, that's so important. Like, understanding what you're getting yourself into is really, really important. So I think some of my best teachers when I was growing up, you know, sometimes you have like, I'm a big believer that students don't hate the topic. They just hate the way it's being taught, right? That type of thing, right? I hate chemistry. No, you probably, your chemistry teacher's maybe not breaking it down for you in the right way. And so some of my best teachers growing up, some of the hardest subjects I've took, they've been like, they just explained it in such a perfect way. Like, it was just so understandable and relatable and digestible and
relatable.
I took some of those lessons of, I want people to have like these aha moments quickly. Wow. And so, you know, being able to break something down in non-technical terms, I think, is important.
Right. And to do so in a way where it disarms people almost, when you just show up as your authentic self. You're so comfortable in yourself, rather than fronting or trying to play a part or using like stiffy language type thing. That was one of the things when I was talking to you, we're just having a conversation here.
Yeah.
And it was so helpful. And I think that disarms people and it allows that connection to happen. And I love to see that in leaders, to show other leaders that it's possible. And, you know, you are telling me about your husband and you both just had a baby.
Yes.
And we heard Avia, right? Is how you say
yes,
it?
Yes, Avia. Yes.
Avia. Heard her joining the episode a little bit, which I love. But again, it's like, because you stand in who you are and you're so authentic in the way you share that. And those things, I think they really make a difference in our ability as leaders to be able to show up like that. It makes a difference in the connection we can have. It makes a difference in our ability, I think, to maximize our impact and the contribution we're making.
I agree. I think that's part of being vulnerable. There's definitely a little bit of fear when you're being vulnerable, for sure, but that's healthy and good. I didn't think we were going to talk about this particular topic. I mean, it's kind of a little bit morbid. I kind of maybe want to bring it up, because when I happen to have had like a lot of experience with death, and death sucks, right? But like at the end of the day, I think sometimes when you're faced with death, you don't have to be a child, like when you're faced with that reality of like losing someone, grandparent, parent, sister, whatever, it just causes you to just be a little bit more present, which translates to vulnerability, which translates to having a little bit of fear, but, you know, confidence to move forward. Like, I think I attribute a lot of that to that. You know, I lost like a grandparent in like early high school, which is like unheard of. Like my husband just lost his grandparents. He was like in his 40s, you know, like I lost all of my grandparents by the time I was like 20, you know, that type of thing. I'm not wishing death upon anyone, but like taking almost embracing, again, strife or, you know, pain or whatever, and learning how to overcome then and not succumb, I think is one of the attributes that can make you vulnerable and present showing up.
You know? Yeah. It's really true. And thank you for sharing that. Yeah. And I don't think it's morbid. And I actually relate to it in ways. My grandfather was my best friend. I still wear his charm. His J is a tattoo on my hand, my arm. There were several people. My stepmom had died on my 22nd birthday. Just all these things. Yeah. And I think the thing that stands out for me is realize that you really do only have one shot at this.
Yeah,
and
totally, and
again, when I say that, sometimes people do think it's a bit more, but I'm like, well, no, it's more of a
reality.
It's just a reality.
It's a reality. You know,
I'm not a spirit finger cheerleader type person. I'm a realist. I'm an optimistic realist. Mm-hmm. And you know, it comes down to that. It's like, well, I only have one shot in life, and it goes really fast. And so this is part of what it drives me to do the things I'm doing, to, you know, honor people like you, have you on the show, and to spread this message so that we can learn from and with each other. But I do think, to your point, sometimes you gain that perspective from going through some of those challenges. But before I let you go, because I know we're going a little bit over time, so I'm going to quickly close this up. But one thing I do want to reference is related to fear. So one of the things that you said to me that it's been ringing in my ears since that one conversation we had months ago,
yeah,
was that you don't operate from a place of fear. And again, I think that we see a lot of people, especially right now in society and business, operating from a place of fear. And it's ironic in a way, because you, as you've told me, spend half of your time in Israel and half of your time in the US.
Yep. New Jersey. Yep.
And clearly Israel has gone a ton of strife.
Yeah.
So can you share with us your perspective on how do you do that? You have such a sense of joy and peace in the face of this.
It probably has a lot to do with the fact that I moved to Israel for my husband. I was chasing him here for love type of thing. That has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
Because my only connection to Israel was my dad was Israeli, but I never really had a deep connection, I think, that maybe others might have to Israel. Nothing was pulling me here except him. So I definitely think like love is a big basis of it. I came to realize how relative fear is, because it's very interesting. When I've been here kind of going back and forth for about 7 years. So rockets flying, you know, October 7th and stuff like that. But I also started to realize how relative fear is, because I'm from an area in New Jersey that's right next to Newark. And Newark's like a rough and tough neighborhood. And yeah, it's not bombs flying and you know, hostages being taken, but that's my point. It's all relative. So like, you know, everyone's comfortableness with fear is all relative, depending on kind of where you are. So I think just, you know, I think I'm like you. I think I'm an op. I think you said it perfectly. I'm an optimistic realist, right? Type of thing. I want to believe everything is going to be okay, and the whole world's gonna, you know, we're all gonna be kind of have world peace. I want to believe that, despite of everything that's going on, but I don't have fear where I live. I do have some fear when I go back to that. So to my point, I do have some fear when I go back to the United States and what's happening in the United States. We don't have to get into that, but like, I do have some fear there.
I do have some fear there as well.
Right. So, so that's what I mean. It's like all relative. So like my fear was not a rocket.
So well said. Well, I thank you so much for coming on, for all that you shared. Thank you for operating the way you do and for being an example of that. So folks, I'm telling you, contact David. He's amazing. David, thank you for being my friend. Thank you for being on the show. And everybody have a wonderful day.